Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the people sitting here on the pews on this very wet and windy morning. Welcome to people joining us via the web camera. I hope you're all keeping well. And welcome to our visitors to the church. I know some people do come along for Remembrance Day service, and you're very welcome too. And I think on this Remembrance Sunday, we still hold in our hearts all those who are suffering from wars at this time. And we begin with our opening words. Come into this circle of love and justice. Come into this community of searchers for love, justice, and peace. We gather that we may experience the peace and serenity of this place. That peace may sustain us in the days ahead. Our chalice lighting. We light our chalice as a reminder of the traditions that hold us together, the values and aspirations we share as a community, our commitment to the common good, our care for those who are downtrodden, and our yearning for a better world that is yet to be, where all may know true freedom, justice, equality, and peace. May this small flame be for us a sign of faith, hope, and peace. We'll stand to sing our first hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 10, Immortal Love, Forever Full, hymn number 10. Our first prayer this morning is a responsive prayer, and it's 597 in the back of the hymn book. So go to 597. The readings at the back are numbered for people visiting, and it's 597. love versus hate. So I say the part in firm writing, and if you join in the part in italics. Never does hatred cease by hating in return. Only through love can hatred come to an end. Victory breeds hatred. The conquered dwell in hate and resentment. They who give up all thought of victory or defeat may be calm and live happily and in peace. Let us overcome violence by gentleness. Let us overcome evil by good. Let us overcome the miserly by liberality. Let us overcome the liar by the truth. Now let us go to the back of that hymn book and say the words printed on the back page that attempt to articulate what we try to do here. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine. This do we covenant with each other and with God. Now, Will is down to read this morning, but we had a text from him, but he's here. Well done, Will. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. Sorry for giving you a fright, Bridget. I got caught in roadworks this morning and was able to practice the Serenity Prayer. I've chosen to read a piece from this play called Crossings by Deirdre Kinahan. Crossings was commissioned in 2018 and performed throughout England for the centenary of Armistice Day, for the end of the First World War. And just a little bit of background, Crossings takes place in 1918, the first half of the play, and the second half of the play takes place in 2018. And it was a beautiful play. I had the privilege, actually, to be in this, travelling around the United Kingdom during Brexit time. When I met some fantastic people and we played in old war memorial halls. It was a very special time, but I met some extraordinary people remembering their war dead, and we got to hear stories in the villages. But anyway, a little bit of context to the piece. It's the piece I'm going to read is an encounter that takes place between Margaret and Grace. And Grace was born Sean Doherty in Kells, County Meath, and he went off to fight on the front line, and he found his family amongst a theatre troupe. Would you believe it? This was news to me, that each battalion would have had its own music hall or theatre troupe, and it was used as a way of sort of giving some levity amongst these very dark times. So that's kind of the context. And Grace is returning. William was killed in the war, and Grace and William had a relationship. And Grace is returning to give Margaret, William's sister, some belongings, some notebooks, and sketchbooks. And so this piece I'm going to read, I'm going to play two characters, we'll see how that goes, but it's a short piece. And just if there's a reference to something called the Balmorals, that was the name of the theatre troupe. There were lots of different theatre troupes. Some of them were called the Lilies or the Pierrots, or they each had their own individual names. So I couldn't decide where to start this, you see, because I love this play so much. But anyway, let's go from page 24. So Margaret says, "I can't believe it, there was singing on the front." And Grace replies, "Of course, and dancing and play acting to bring some relief from the carnage." "But did the army know about it?" "The army organized it, eventually. Shakespeare is good for morale, don't you know? And penny operas and bawdy jokes and pantos. Anything to take them away, take us away." "But William never showed any interest in theatrics before, didn't he?" "No, never. He was that good that they used to swap him between battalions to stop him being killed. They used to swap us both because we were worth more singing, Margaret, than firing any guns." "But William did get killed." "Yes, William did get killed. And the singing was never the same after, not for me anyway." "I knew nothing about this. How did I know nothing about this? Because it doesn't quite fit the picture, does it? Singing for king and country. But they needed us, Margaret. Them Tommies and Freddies and Alberts, they needed the Balmorals as much as they needed air. Soldiers would sit in the tent for hours, you know, before curtain up. I can still hear them, you know, in my dreams. I can still hear them stamp and clap and roar. And I can hear them laugh, laugh and laugh like little children, trying to convince us to keep going, because if we could pretend, then so could they. And I can hear their hearts burst, Margaret, when we sing. Because I could feel their longing every night in that tent. I could feel it in my bones. When I would stick my head out of a cardboard window on a cardboard cutout train, and they might all sing along with me, Liverpool, Leeds, or Birmingham, I don't care. And their longing would hang in the air. And their terror would scream through their cheers, and their ache would rattle. Because they knew, Margaret, they knew that they were never coming home.
It's lovely to see lots of children here this morning. And children really help the adults try to understand what I tell them later on. So this is to help the adults learn something. If you want to change something, I'm going to ask you for ideas how you would go about changing. Say you had a friend, and your friend was very sad, and you wanted to change that. Have you any idea what you could do to change the sadness in your friend?
You could ask her what's wrong.
You could, yes. And would that make her feel better?
Do something about it.
If you were going to do something about it, what do you think you would do?
You would maybe tell her mum that she's sad.
You could tell somebody else and ask them to help them. And if there was no adults around, would you tell them a sad story? If you had a friend who was really sad, would you say, wait till I tell you a terrible sad story? Or would you say, I'll tell you something good, or tell them a joke? Which would be better to tell them?
A joke.
A joke would be better. That's one thing, that's doing it. So to change something, often you don't do the same thing. You have to do, there's a word for it, the opposite. Isn't that it? Say you went in your bedroom and your mum comes in and there's loads of stuff on the floor, books and games and all sorts of things, pencils, and your mum says, you can't even walk across the floor. Please tidy your room. What would you do?
Tidy your room.
Now, if you were going to tidy your room, would you pick up the things and put them where they're meant to be? Or would you go downstairs, get the rubbish bin, come up and tip it out on your floor?
No.
No, you wouldn't. You have to do the opposite, don't you? You have to tidy it up. And say, I know sometimes when we go home at night and our curtains are pulled back and there's a street light outside. But when we go into the room, the only light there is the street light. So if we wanted to get rid of the darkness, would we go out? Would we pull the curtains to keep the light out? Would we? Maybe we could do something else. What else could we do? Anyone else any ideas?
We could do the opposite.
What is the opposite?
Pull the curtains the other way.
Pull them back. But we could do something else. We could turn on a light. Turn on the light. Right? So when we want to change something, we have to stop the other thing. We have to do the opposite. So if people are fighting and they hate one another, how do we stop that? How would we change that?
We'll give Dan.
Helping and being kind.
Helping and being kind. And we have to stop hating them. And what's the opposite to hate?
Love.
And that's really hard to do. But that's exactly what we do have to do. And that's one of the hardest things we human beings have to learn. So thank you, children, for coming up. We're going to place our poppy wreath on front. Denise is going to introduce the ceremony. Denise is chair of our congregation. And just to tell the children, this is to remember five young men from this country and this congregation who went to war over 100 years ago, and they were all killed.
Today we remember those who died in the great war that was to end all wars, and sadly didn't. Those men, young men, were William Kidd, Walter Varian, William Fitzgerald, and the brothers George Faulkner, aged just 19, and his brother Frederick, who was 23, and who sadly died within, I think, a week of each other. These young men were all part of our congregation here, and their families were part of the life of this community. We also remember today two other family members from this community, Captain Cecil Grimshaw and Lieutenant Colonel Ewing Grimshaw, again brothers, and they were part of this community with their families. We take a moment to remember them.
Thank you so much, Fergus, and Denise, and Daniel. And in total contrast, we have our second hymn, Hail the Glorious Golden City, hymn number 140. For my reading, I've chosen a poem by Maya Angelou. It's called A Brave and Startling Truth. We, this people, on a small and lonely planet, traveling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. And when we come to it, to the day of peacemaking, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, when we come to it, when the curtain falls on the minstrel show of hate and faces sooted with scorn are scrubbed clean, when battlefields and Colosseum no longer rake our unique and particular sons and daughters up with the bruised and bloody grass to lie in identical plots in foreign soil. When we come to it, when we let the rifles fall from our shoulder and children dress their dolls in flags of truce, when landmines of death have been removed and the aged can walk into evenings of peace, when religious ritual is not perfumed by the incense of burning flesh and childhood dreams are not kicked away by nightmares of abuse. When we come to it, we will confess that not the pyramids with their stones set in mysterious perfection, not the gardens of Babylon singing with eternal beauty in our collective memory, nor the Grand Canyon kindled into glorious color by western sunsets, nor the Danube flowing its blue soul into Europe, nor the sacred peak of Mount Fuji stretching to the rising sun. Neither Father Amazon or Mother Mississippi, who without favor nurture all creatures in the depths and on the shores, these are not the only wonders of the world. When we come to it, we this people on this minuscule and kithless globe, we who reach daily for the bomb, the blade, and the dagger, yet who petition in the dark for tokens of peace. With this people on this mote of matter, in whose mouths abide cankerous words which challenge our very existence, yet out of those same mouths come songs of such exquisite sweetness that the heart falters in its labor and the body is quieted in awe. We this people on this small and drifting planet, whose hands can strike with such abandon that in a twinkling life is snapped from the living, yet those same hands can touch with such healing, irresistible kindness, that the haughty back is happy to bow and the proud back is glad to bend. Out of such chaos, of such contradiction, we learn that we are neither devils nor divines. When we come to it, we this people on this wayward floating body, created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely without sanctimonious piety and without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible. We are the miraculous, the true wonder of the world. But that is when, and only when, we come to it. We now have a time of silence for personal reflection, and Josh will bring it to an end with a piece of music. The title of the address is How and What We Remember. This year, once again, we laid a poppy wreath at the plaque in the hallway that commemorates five young men from this congregation who died in the First World War. The five deaths took place over a period of just 8 months. Two of the boys were brothers. They died just 5 days apart. And those are the photographs in the thing, the Perspex things on the table. A third was an only child. They were average age at the time of their deaths was just 23 years. And we lay our wreath in remembrance and in sadness at the loss of young lives and in protest against war as a solution to disputes. Two buzz phrases were popular at the time of that war. The first was the war to end all wars. The other was it will be over by Christmas. Both were lies. But some cliches are true. For example, history keeps repeating itself. History is written by the victors, and the first casualty in war is truth. Israeli leaders say that when Israel utterly destroys Hamas, Israel will have peace. In that, I hear echoes of the war to end all wars. Because war never creates peace. Only peace can replace war. Hatred is never conquered by hating in return. Light can only replace darkness. Love is the only solution to hate. History is written by the victors, and history keeps repeating itself. Are two cliches I experienced while researching for my address today. A few months ago, I was looking for children's stories, and I came across an account of the life of someone called Irina Sendler. I thought when I saw it, that's great, I can talk about Irina at our Remembrance Sunday. And the story of her life says a lot about those cliches. Irina Sendler was born in Poland in 1910. She lived until 2008, so she was 98. She did terrific innings. Her father was a doctor who treated the poor and marginalized. He actually died from typhus contracted from a patient in 1917 when Irina was just 7 years old. And she did inherit her father's liberal humanitarian qualities. Some of the patients her father treated were from the Jewish people in the area who were the marginalized group in their town. I grew up with a version of history that said Adolf Hitler was the instigator and driving force behind the Holocaust. I believed that Nazism enforced Hitler's poisonous ideas throughout the conquered countries of Europe. Now, I was aware that there had been pogroms against the Jews from time to time, but I thought that they were intermittent, isolated, and really, to a large extent, historic. But researching the story of Irina made me realize that Hitler's plan for the Jewish solution, as it was called, was only pushing an open door. The door was wide open. Anti-Semitism was not the preserve of the Nazi regime during the war. Jews were expelled in 1290 from England by Edward I. In 1492, they were expelled from Spain. In 1493, they were expelled from Sicily. In 1561, Venice created the first ghetto. European history is a chronicle of anti-Semitism. Irina Sendler's social activism began when she was at a university in Warsaw, and she attended that university between the years 1927 to 29. Her first protest was against the proposed introduction of ghetto benches and quotas to limit the number of Jewish students in Polish universities. 1927 to 29, Hitler had not come to power. In 1931, a student group called the Green Ribbon Group began to agitate that seats be reserved for Jewish students and Jewishness be marked on student cards. The Nuremberg Laws of 1935 were an inspiration for the existing anti-Semitism alive in Europe. And in 1936, that's 3 years before the start of the war, the Polish government were in talks with Zionist groups in Palestine with a view to the enforced migration of 3 million Polish Jews to Palestine. That was before the war. With the outbreak of war, the Warsaw Ghetto was established in November, December 1940. And about 460,000, you can't be sure of these figures, but about that number of Jews was sealed into an area of 1.3 square miles. The average room occupancy was 9.2 persons. And they barely subsisted on meager food rations. Today, more than 2 million Palestinians are corralled into approximately 72 square miles, might be marginally less crowded than the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto, but the Warsaw Ghetto wasn't bombed in 1940. I listened to a Palestinian woman speak on TV, and she said that she's living in a house, sharing it with 45 relatives. And like the Warsaw Ghetto, food supplies are being withheld, as is water and medical supplies. An awful tale of history repeating itself. And of course, the shining light is that some people risked not only their lives, but the lives of family members to help Jews. And the law was that if you were found in any way assisting a Jew, you were executed, as was your extended family. Irina Sendler was one such individual. Using her social work as a cover, Irina had access to the ghetto. She and fellow conspirators smuggled out almost 2,500 children in boxes and cases. They placed them with sympathetic Christian families in orphanages and particularly in convents. The children were given Christian names and identities, and they were taught Christian prayers just in case they were interrogated by the Gestapo, that they would be able to pass as Christian children. Irina kept careful note of the children's Jewish identity, the new Christian identity they were given, and where they were placed. And she did this because she wanted to reunite the children with their parents at the end of the war. But sadly, very few of them did manage to reunite with the parents. Most of the parents died. On the 13th of October, 1943, Irina was arrested by the Gestapo. She managed to give her friend, for safekeeping, the jar with those details of the children on it, because had that jar been found, every one of them and all the people who were helping them would have been executed. And although she was tortured while in jail, she never betrayed any member of her group. She was sentenced to be executed, and the date set for her execution was the 13th of November, 1943, which is 80 years ago tomorrow. She was being transported to the place of execution when she was rescued by the underground. They had bribed the guards escorting her. And to keep the ruse up on, her execution was publicly reported, and she was all the time in hiding until the war ended. After the war, she received many awards for her work. She is named among the righteous of nations in Israel. And she had quite a colourful personal life. I love really good people who aren't real saints either. She married just before the outbreak of war, and her husband was taken prisoner of war in September 1939. So at the very beginning of the war, he was taken prisoner and spent the entire war in a prisoner of war camp. But he survived. They were reunited after the war. But 2 years later, in 1947, she divorced him. And she married a Jewish man that she had met in the Warsaw Ghetto. They had two surviving children, and he was a member of the Jewish community, but their children only learned that their father had Jewish identity as adults, accidentally, because they were very careful not to mention things like this. It wasn't important that you were a Jew or a Christian or whatever else you wanted to be. You were a human being first. And I think that's a lovely thing to teach, to bring children up like that. They were just people. Her second husband left her in 1957, and he died 3 years later. And she went on to remarry her first husband. 10 years later, she divorced him again. I loved that. But she went on to work with children right until her retirement, and she died aged 98. Since the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, Jews from all parts of the world have settled in Palestine. And when you think of the history of the Jews in Europe, it's obvious why they want the security of their own state. But the creation of that state has caused a great deal of hurt to the Palestinians, citizens of that land living there. Zionists, which we should distinguish from Jews, really they're very political minded, and they have the intention of settling everywhere in Palestine, where they take over the land from Palestinians, set up a settlement, and that is against international law. And yet international law are not doing anything about it. So it's very difficult for the Palestinians to be corralled into these areas and see people from a different tradition living on their land. So that gives us an understanding of what happened in October with those murders. And naturally, those killings have struck at the heart of Israeli fears. Fears generated from centuries of persecution. And at this distance, we may understand this. We are not involved. We haven't lost a member of our family. But we know that the killing of Palestinians will not create peace. It will increase hatred. The British government thought internment in Northern Ireland would get rid of the IRA. It didn't. It recruited for them. Israel rightly condemns the world for remaining silent while millions of their people were annihilated. I think the world has to learn from that. We must not repeat the mistake. We must speak out for justice and mercy and peace. Because right now, Israel is in too much pain to consider peace. It's up to us to insist that it's put on the agenda. And we need, I think, to be very careful about how we internalize accounts of war and grief. Because grief is the same for Israelis and Palestinians. But sometimes we only see one part of the story. And when you see film footage of a funeral service, just like ours, with photographs of the deceased in much happier circumstances, you immediately make an emotional connection with the grief of that family, those people. But we have to remember that a hurried burial during a lull in fighting is just as emotional for the people who are grieving. Hatred will not return a single victim of an atrocity to a grieving family. Hatred will only create more grief, because only love can replace hatred. So let us speak out for peace and reconciliation in the world and do what we can for peace. Amen. We're now going to have our third hymn, It's Spirit of Life. It's number 1, 2, 3. It's a very short hymn, so we're going to sing it twice. Our offertory will now be taken. Our notices. Fair trade tea and coffee are served downstairs. Please do join us. There's a few copies of Uskilt magazine for November on the table. The managing committee meet tomorrow evening via Zoom at 7:30. At Wednesday, the usual lunchtime meditation in the church and on via the web camera, 1:05 to 1:35. Gifts for the Christmas tree. It's been a tradition that we bring in wrapped gifts with names and ages, suggested ages for the gift. And that's really changing, that doesn't suit many organisations. I have been in contact with the Capuchin Centre and just to ask them what would help them most at Christmas. And that organization seems to be very well organized. But the demand on their services is increasing all the time, they said. They used to, until about a year ago, provide lunches for about 500 people. Now it's 700 every day. That's every day. And every week they give out parcels of basic food items like tea and coffee and sugar to help people manage. Where there are families with very young babies, they ask, now they don't ask questions of anyone else, but for families with very young babies, they ask to see details of the birth of a child, and they provide them with baby food and nappies every week. So there's an awful lot of demands on their time. And they try to give nice days out, you know, Christmas party, Halloween party for the children, just to cheer them up. I asked what would help most, and they said they like to give every child a hat and a pair of gloves, because that'll keep them warm and snug at Christmas, or in the winter. And they also said it's seemingly a tradition in Dublin that you get a new pyjamas for Christmas Day. So pyjamas would be welcome as well. But we have to be logical about this. If we're giving them the pyjamas are no good on Christmas morning arriving here. They have to come before Christmas. So hats, gloves, pyjamas early in the season. They also give families with children a voucher for €40 for Smith's toy shop. And then the parents can spend that 40, they can add to it or whatever they want to do with it. But they are dealing with about 500 children. Now, we can't look after 500, but we could do the best for some of them. So if people wanted to do that, you know, and if you can't afford a voucher for €40 and you can afford one for 5 or 10, that's fine. Just bring that along and we will put those together and make up 40 vouchers, €40 worth with it. The choir are practicing for their Christmas carols and they welcome anyone to join them to make a beautiful noise at our carol service and Christmas mornings. See Gavin or Shari if you would like to join. Also to bring your attention and notice for voting members register. Anyone who wants to be a member here is welcome to be a member. We do have to keep track of voting members. And that is a different register. There's forms on the table if you want your name included on that for the coming year. The book club meet on the last Wednesday of every month in the vestry and via Zoom. And this month they're having two books for which you can read, either or both, and they welcome people. They're meeting in the vestry at 7:30 on the 29th of November. Now we have our final hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 159. This is my song, O God of all the nations.
Thank you.
Our blessing. The blessing of peace be upon us. The power of love direct and sustain us. May the peace of this sacred space preserve our going out and our coming in from this time forth until we meet again. Amen.